Hey everyone, before we begin this week's episode, I want to tell you about a really great offer for registering a .tech domain. We're going to talk a lot about CES this week, and you might have noticed that they have a brand new domain name. Originally, they were cesweb.org, which not only is a mouthful and kind of old school, but it gives you no indication of what CES actually is. Well, guess what? Their new domain, it's really simple. ces.tech. It's short, it's memorable, and it's perfectly aligned with what CES represents. Lots of other brands have hopped on the .tech bandwagon, including Viacom, Cisco, Citigroup, and Intel. And of course, lots of startups, many of them at CES, are coming out of the gate with .tech domains. You know how hard it is to get a memorable domain name, especially with like all the .coms are taken, .nets and .orgs are kind of weird and don't really align with what your business represents. Well, .tech domains are going to solve that. They're flexible. You can use them for an existing brand, a startup or some brand new idea that you have, maybe a tech-oriented event or community, or even just a personal site or a blog. .tech is going to fit all of those. Simply put, a .tech domain signals to the world your commitment to developing and showcasing new technology. So, to celebrate CES moving to .tech, they're having a limited-time sale of .tech domains. Head on over to go.tech/CESLive and use code CESLive for 90% off registrations for 1, 5, and 10-year .tech domains. Make your next big idea memorable with a .tech domain.
So we had a hard line put in today, a hard phone line, and they had took my internet away for a minute, and so I had to...
What year is it? Why did you need a phone line?
In case of emergencies.
You have fiber.
Yes, until something happens to the fiber, then I don't have it.
Fiber is like the most reliable thing, maybe not consumer Fios.
It's not like the fiber, it's like the pole could fall down outside, or... Any like literal physical thing could happen to the cables, so it's just another redundancy.
Okay.
It's another fallback. But so they had to swap out my converter box. So they take the fiber cable and they convert it to the copper cable, and so they had to swap that out. And so they took my internet away from me, and I had to tether my phone. And I was trying to talk to Paul on Slack, and so I typed about 5 messages. And things started shifting around in front of me. So like my messages started changing orders. And so
Oh, no.
I kept typing. I was like, hey, are you seeing this? But I didn't. So in Slack, if a message hasn't sent yet, it's very, very light gray. The contrast isn't enough to actually be able to distinguish with your eyeballs if a message has sent or if it's still sending. Fix it. Slack.
Sounds like an eyeball problem.
Yeah. So I didn't know they hadn't sent yet. And so they were just streaming in for him, and I had to text him and be like, yeah, just let him go until it stops. He was like, what's going on? Cause, and I couldn't respond in Slack to say, hey, things are slow. But yeah, that was fun. So it's been nice having fast and reliable internet.
That happened to us a while ago where Discord went down, as it does from time to time. And I realized I didn't have any other way to reach you. Like, I don't have you on Facebook. I didn't have your email address. Mm-hmm. I don't have your phone number, so I couldn't even text you.
I like it that way.
Yeah. That's fine. You have boundaries. I understand.
I just don't want people to talk to me.
I respect that.
Like, that's not true. That's not true, because I ask for feedback every day, and people do talk to me on Twitter. So sometimes I'm a curmudgeon, but yeah. What were we talking about? Speed coefficients and stuff.
Yeah, so actually, people are actually doing trading stocks over RF instead of over the internet, because RF links go through the air, and the speed of light through air is faster than the speed of light through fiber. So you can get those, you know, micro second trades in just before someone else by doing it over a direct RF link, as opposed to, through the internet, through fiber.
If you're in an industry where your micro optimizations are literally switching the type of medium that you're sending a transmission through, maybe you should find another industry to.
I'm not arguing with you, but it's a fascinating technical.
It is. Yeah, it's a
challenge.
It's interesting. I'm just being snarky.
No, you're right. I mean, I agree with you. You're not wrong.
Yeah, so I've been having to, also having to read some business books or listen to some business books, and I'm getting real snarky because I'm learning. Like I'm learning stuff. I never went to business school, so there's stuff I'm learning. But half of the time, I don't want to say which books I'm listening to, because I don't want to drag them through the mud. And there's wisdom to be gained. I'm just in a snarky mood, maybe, but just kind of roll my eyes when I read statements where it's just like you have to believe this and achieve it, and you make this thing up and you believe it, and it like happens out of thin air. I'm like, that's not how anything works, really. But all right, you know, it's like, I can't remember the name of it now, but it's kind of like imagineering, I guess, which maybe isn't bad. But again, the mood that I'm in right now, it just kind of makes me laugh a little bit.
This is great. Channel this. You need to channel this for our recording.
Yeah, channel.
So what are you all turned up about this week with work? Give it to me. Lay into me.
I don't want the hate mail. I was looking at a project called LitView, I think it was. I think it's called LitView. Yeah. If you're familiar with Vue, you have single file components, so you can put your template and your script and your style in one file, .view, and that eventually gets, through Vue Loader, gets split out into files that it needs to. And with LitView, you can have sort of a single file component set up in JS and TS file extensions, so just in your JavaScript file. So you have just like an HTML function, and then you put your Vue template in there, and then you would export default just like you normally would in a script tag. And that's like a basic example. It kind of goes farther from there, so you can use like class-based syntax from Vue and things like that. And I look at this, I'm like, yeah, it's interesting, but I don't know technically why you would. I guess maybe it's a preference thing, right? So when I look at some of this stuff, it's like, oh, that looks a lot like React World to me when I look at it. And it's not that it's not necessary. It feels to me more like a personal preference. And
yeah, what I don't get about this is it's such a surface level thing. Like Vue components are one thing. They're designed to sort of look and feel like an HTML page. Like they're tags. The root elements are all tags. Obviously your templates are all tags. And then your script is literally in a script tag, just like in a web page. And your styles, oh, well, guess what? They're in a style tag. Like, that's a convention that exists. There's a W3C standard for it. And yeah, Vue single file components are, like, weird in the sense that they kind of blend them all together and then Webpack rips them apart again.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the beauty of Vue, is you have your Vue logic all in one place. And this LitView thing is weird because it, like, takes HTML and it's like, it converts it to basically JavaScript as being the sort of default export mechanism. And yeah, I don't know. Like you said, it just seems cosmetic.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, so like I'm reading through some comments on this blog post about it. And, you know, some people, so I gather a lot of people would want to do this if they're using TypeScript because I can't remember what version, maybe it's version 3, Vue version 3 that's upcoming is going to have better TypeScript support, especially with the templating syntax. And I think some of it stems from that. They're using something like LitView and it's just in a regular TS file, doesn't break things for them, which I could see where, I could see how that would be nice, but I don't know. So I guess what turned me up about this was, I was just really enjoying working on Design Collective today because we're just using plain old .view files, and we have been for 2 years, and it hasn't gotten harder to maintain over time as things have grown, and it's fine.
You don't have any particular like higher level architecture or anything. You're not doing anything crazy. Like you're doing everything the recommended Vue and Nuxt way to do things. You're just sticking to the conventions as far as I can tell, right? And you're still able to scale.
Yeah. Yeah. And we use Vue when we need it. We don't when we don't. And it's fine. It's fine. It's pretty high praise, I think, because usually when you're working on something over and over and over again, you start to see little cracks and then they start to get under your skin and you start to like ruminate on them, you know, until one day you can't handle it anymore. And that hasn't really happened to me with our front end code base. So that's good. I don't know. So that's what got me turned up. I was like, yeah, I could see. I mean, if you're using TypeScript, I could see where this could be helpful. But I just don't see the appeal personally if I weren't using TypeScript to go that route. And it's just interesting to see. Like, it's not bad that people are excited and enthusiastic about something like this. It just seems a little bit foreign. Maybe it's not that I'm like turned up in a bad way. It's just I don't understand it completely. But then again, like, I was totally fine with CoffeeScript until ES6 was just kind of the...
Until ES6 stole all the good features from CoffeeScript.
Well, not even that. It was just like, well, this is never going away. This is going to be the future, the way going forward. So we might as well adopt it, right? There wasn't anything that I went to ES6 for because it was better or because I liked it better. It was purely a, this is going to be ubiquitous. So we might as well go that route.
Mm-hmm.
But that was what I was thinking when I called you. was that? I mean, today was really good. Like, I sent you a screenshot earlier of my pull request I did today, where I deleted a whole bunch of stuff, and so I had kind of a status call or like my performance review, I guess, with my boss today, and went over 2018, 2019, and kind of talked about how 2018 for me was a little bit stressful because it was just new feature after new feature after new feature. In fact, when I list the new features, everything that we did in 2018, I can't really understand how Paul and I did it as two people.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, even like changing the whole business model, because I think before 2018, we weren't even doing subscriptions. We were just making money off commissions on sales.
Yeah, so, right.
Yeah. Like the whole thing is different. It's a different app. And so I kind of mentioned, like, yeah, the pace is add. And then that towards the end of the year, I think all of December, Paul and I just spent cleaning up our backlog of issues and things like that and working on bugs and working on enhancements. And what was interesting was that this week, our head of support person made a comment who was like, hey, you know, I wanted to let you guys know you guys have been killing it lately. You guys have been doing a good job. And I haven't really, like, nothing new has come up. No one's reported anything recently since mid-December-ish or since late December. And we were like, huh, there can't be really like a quid, you know, like that's not a coincidence that
just means nobody's using the app. Sorry. That could sorry be to that tell too. You this to be the one to, you
analytics,
know, break this
analytics say that you're wrong, but,
I hope so.
But, yeah, so that was a positive reinforcement of that behavior, right? Like taking time and working in a house that we have. So, So that was one of my big goals for 2019 was spending more time. So towards the end of the year, I started doing one day a week on Fridays. It was Refactor Friday. So on Fridays, I would spend time finding, like, I keep a list of things I want to refactor in Notion. It's just a big table, and I have them tagged, whether it's like test related or whether it's front end or back end related or whatever. And so on Fridays, I just look at that and see, like, what can I get done today? It's kind of like, what's the smallest thing I can do that would have the biggest impact? And so that's what I've been doing. And so I might bump that up to 2 days if I can a week, depending on, you know, features that we're working on and timeframes. I'm going to try my best to do like a Thursday, Friday maintenance kind of thing.
I should call it a trash can Thursday.
Yeah.
Like delete as much code as you can. Like I'm picturing you being on a call with someone who's like, oh, what work did you do today? Like, oh yeah, I deleted a bunch of code.
Yeah, I did.
I know, but it's just it's funny to put that spin on it. Like if you don't understand, you're like, well, what? Why? Well, is this a good thing? But
what's even funnier is that Lindsay is in our Slack channel where our GitHub robot goes to, like our GitHub robot reports like pull requests and things like that. And she'll see things where I specifically mention like clean up or delete, and then she'll put like a little like the party reaction emoji.
Ta-da. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, ta-da. Exactly. She'll do that, which is like she gets it, which is cool. So yeah, today was good. I wasn't even turned up because today was rough. Today was like I'm content with our stack. I've gotten some questions lately, like why would you choose Elixir over other languages out there that might have a stronger, more mature ecosystem. And I've kind of answered some of those on Twitter just because the language is great. The ecosystem will come, but the language is great. I like it a lot. I'm productive with it. I'm content with it. And it was cool to like have that feeling while I was working today. So it was kind of both sides. Like the front end was fine. The back end was fine. Like back end's getting better. I'm actually making progress and fixing some of the mistakes I made a year ago, a year and a half ago, and it feels good.
Just think about all the mistakes you'll be fixing a year from now.
Yeah.
Or don't. Maybe don't think about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So Kevin, friend of the show, Kevin Sherman, he just was kind of asking some questions on Twitter and on Spectrum. And it's funny because I think one of the last episodes, I'm not sure if that's heard yet or not, but you had mentioned that one of the things we changed, it was a 2018, 2019 review. You'd mentioned that we changed kind of our schemas to like a flat structure, dk.data dot or similar. And so he said, I was listening to this week's episode a little too quickly. Did you just say that your schemas are all in one place? right. Something about a data namespace? And that's like pretty different from the Phoenix docs and maybe what other people would recommend. So like, you and I kind of jumped in and we're just describing like how I arrived at that place, like why I got there. And he's like, oh, it makes sense. But yeah, so I like those questions a lot, and I'm happy to talk more about mistakes that I have made. Maybe we can do an episode in the future about like what went wrong or what things I've done wrong and what the consequences of those were. That might be interesting to people. But yeah, I don't know. Like the mistakes are slowly going away and things are getting slowly cleaner and we're still making forward progress with new features. So
I don't think that's any one episode. I think that's every episode.
Yeah. We'll have to start. The next 100 episodes will be, and then I did this and it sucked. It stuck for about a year until I could clean it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I did want to point out, I have to find this. I don't know. It's somewhere in Twitter, but someone said, I think it was a few days ago I was reading it, someone said, it's perfectly fine to write crappy code when you're kind of trying to solve a problem and when you're just getting into things, it's totally fine to do that, as long as you go and clean it up. And I want to put an asterisk by as long as you go and clean it up, because that could be the next day, it could be the next week, it could be 2 years later. And in our case, it's 2 years later.
Right.
But it's still getting cleaned up, so it's okay. What about you? What have you been up to today?
Yeah, I've been working on Glance DevOps stuff a bunch the past couple of days, getting into that groove. Just a lot of file cleanup. One of the big things, which was surprisingly simple, was right now. So what I'm doing, if it's been a while since I've talked about this, I'm basically doing some contract work for Glance.net, and they do screen sharing. So I'm kind of streamlining their build and deploy process and using Packer and just lots of shell scripts and AWS and all kinds of other stuff. And so the way they used to deploy apps was they would make a giant tarball of the app release and then deploy it to some physical server somewhere. And they would untar it to a directory, then symlink it, right? So you have like slash latest and you would like symlink it over to the new version and shut down the old version and start up the new version. It's the whole thing, right? And now we actually use Packer to deploy actual Amazon images just on the fly with the actual thing already built from scratch, custom built how we need it. But we were still using those tar files. So literally like someone was uploading a tar file to S3, then we'd pull down the tar file, untar it, and then just like move files into place, which is like dumb to have that extra step, right? It's just a holdover from an old system.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it inherently, but it's just an extra step. So they already have GitLab set up for all their repositories. So I was like, hey, let's just and this is a Python application. So it doesn't require compilation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just was like, hey, give me a deploy token, which is a read-only access to the Git repo. And then, so now when we build a new server, instead of going off to S3, it just pulls the actual, it figures out the tag based off the version number. Pulls down that tag and then just makes a disk image from that or an AMI. So like totally bypassing a whole step of just like, you know, moving files around manually.
Right.
And it's nice, and you know, it's just one step closer in this long trudge of things that we have to get at a place to get this system modernized and automated. You know, next I got to basically learn Jenkins and understand that, because it seems like a whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like a whole thing for sure.
Yeah, they use that for a lot of their internal build stuff. Not for this product, but, we'd like to. So I got to figure that out. But yeah, just lots of moving files around. And it's nice to be able to, it's like you talked about Refactor Fridays and having the time to just move things around and, you know, just get things nice, and it kind of feels good. Kind of, it's like spring cleaning almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
This, I'm kind of at the same point here with Glance, where like they have this process, and now I know enough to be dangerous in the sense that, like, okay, I know all the moving pieces. I can actually start to like move things around without breaking it, but still improve it at the same time. That's right. Kind of my goal right now is like, you know, change the smallest thing possible and just make those slow changes that eventually, you know, we'll get to the end goal of completely automated deployments and auto scaling, which would be awesome, right? Basically, I just want to like write somebody out of a job is my goal.
Write yourself right? out of a job.
Yeah, exactly. That would be perfect.
And that's what they hired you to do in a way, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like that feeling. I mean, it must feel good to have that step. Like today when I opened the PR and it was like, hey, Paul, I deleted like 30 modules that aren't actually being used. A lot of them were left over from the front and back end split when we went API only. And some more of them were from like the Phoenix 1.2 days, like way back. So it's been there a while. It just hasn't been a priority. And so now I guess that was one of the discussions I had with my boss was like, she, and I guess I should say that a lot of the pressure and a lot of the, we need to ship this new thing, it's all like self-inflicted. It's not directed or mandated from my boss. It's not like, you need to ship this by this date. It's always, what can I think I can do? And I always pitch timeframes where it removes my ability to spend time refactoring and cleaning up. And so far this year, I haven't done that, which is great. So someone asked for a timeline on a project I'm working on today, and I got together with Paul and talked about it. And we thought, you know, our first answer was to ourselves. Our first answer was a date. And then we were like, let's push it back 2 weeks. What the heck? So we said, all right, it's going to be this date. And they're like, cool, sounds good. You know, it wasn't like, oh, that's going to take a while. It was, yeah, that sounds good. And it could have been that way the whole time. Rockwell.
I mean, you guys have a pretty good track record for delivering things when you say you will. So I think if you push a thing back here or there, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah.
I think you'll be fine. Ooh,
yeah. Yeah. So
you're certainly better at sticking to deadlines, artificial deadlines, than I am. Something I need to get better at. But
that's what 2019 is for.
It's another topic. Yeah, exactly. Thanks so much to Sentry.io for sponsoring Does Not Compute. Listen, Sentry understands developers. They know your code's broken and they just want to help you fix it. In an ideal world, you'd be able to test everything and test it perfectly. But writing tests is really, really difficult, and you know it's impossible to cover every edge case or anticipate the action of a really, really smart or really dumb user. Despite your best laid plans, your code will eventually go belly up. You could rely on users to report errors, but is that really what you want? It's not only a frustrating experience for users, but you'll end up with incomplete or misleading bug reports that waste the time of both support and development teams. That's why Sentry is here, to tell you about errors in your code before your customers even have a chance to see them. Error reports include detailed contextual information about the error to help you reproduce and fix it, including a full stack trace, the commit where the line of code was checked in, and even the developer to blame for it. You can even get a breadcrumb trail that tracks the user's actions leading up to the error, so you can reproduce the error without ever even reaching out to the user. And Sentry integrates with your deployment pipeline to track errors before they even make it to production. Sentry has first-party support for a ton of client and server-side platforms, including a couple of DNC favorites, Vue.js, Rails, and yes, even Elixir. So head on over to Sentry.io to give it a try. They have a free developer account, which is perfect for personal projects and early-stage applications. Sentry.io. Your code is broken. Let's fix it together.
Speaking of other topics.
Yeah, let's get into our main topic for today.
Our main topic halfway through. Yeah. Our main topic halfway through is actually about CES 2019. And this is actually the first CES I've ever actually paid attention to.
Right.
Being completely honest.
Well, that's not true. Because like you always hear about it. But do you ever actually spend the... Like you always hear about the products that are relevant in that. Or the weird ones that like don't... Like are written, you know, made by insane people.
Well, I would see like the headline, but I'd never click on the article.
Oh, okay.
Never.
And by the way,
never watch a YouTube video or anything.
Talk about getting turned up.
Oh no.
I was doing research for this episode, and so I was reading about CS articles. And I mean, I just yearn for the heyday of, you know, when CNET was actually like a good site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm throwing CNET fully under the bus. So I'm on my iPad. I'm listening to music on Spotify on the iPad. I know the speakers are crap, whatever. I just wanted to have some music on while I was doing this. every single freaking CES news, quote unquote news site that I went to had some kind of autoplaying video. And iOS will only allow one thing to play audio at a time. So it would just pause Spotify and just I'd be listening to music and it would just stop for no reason. And like the embedded video in the page might even be muted. Autoplaying, okay. Overlaid while I'm trying to scroll, not great. Scroll jacking while I'm trying to flick through the page, minus points, F minus. Well, but it was taking over the video, the audio, even though the thing was muted. I eventually just gave up listening to music. I was just like, I'm just going to sit here in silence and fume because
they're designing an experience for you. So what they've done is they've hit peak internet, okay? As the designers, as the marketers, they've hit peak internet because, as you said, they're scroll jacking the site. So it's essentially them using their own website through your device at that point. Right. So if you think about it, they've reached peak internet. They've designed the experience for you. So they're using, at that point, they're using your computer for you. And they're showing you what they want you to see. And that's peak internet as far as business goals for CNET are concerned.
It's probably mining Bitcoin in the background too.
Ooh. Is that still a thing?
Oh yeah. Some sites I go to just peg my CPU for no reason. Apparent reason. I just navigate away. But anyway, that's my small rant about trying to do the research for this.
Yeah, yeah.
It was rough. Real rough.
So are all CESs sort of...
CES is huge. And like the stuff that you read about on tech sites is like such a small slice of what CES is. I mean, it's not a small slice, but like there's so much other stuff there that like consumer... Think about like consumer audio, right? Just by itself, right? They have a whole bunch of stuff at CES, but that's not what you're going to see at the tech blogs. You're going to see laptops and smart speakers and, Ring home cameras and like all this crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
And robots, like, yeah. I don't
robots,
know. CES
exactly.
is gigantic.
Yeah.
So many robots.
One of the first stories I saw was about this thing called Mookie, I think.
Okay.
The first AI-powered pet food bowl is here. It can recognize which pet is eating and can dispense the correct food. I'm like, oh. So can I.
Except you're not. You don't have AI. You just have I.
Why do you have a cat in the first place, then, or a dog? If you're not going to be feeding it, I'm going to get turned up again now. But that was,
that's all right.
I searched for CES.
We're going to turn you up to 11.
I looked at CES 2019 on, because this thing's just going to go in the. It's going to go in the landfill at some point, and it's going to sit there for eternity or whatever. It's not. You know what I mean. People probably aren't going to recycle this thing like they should, and it's going to sit in a landfill. I'm getting real turned up, but yeah, feed your cats with your own hands. So I looked at CES 2019. I looked it up on Twitter, and that was the first thing I saw, and I got real turned up. Maybe, you know
Bucky
what? That's maybe
Bucky
what...
Bucky supports this product.
That's maybe what...
This product was not designed for us. It was designed for Bucky, cat of the show.
Well, is Bucky going to be buying his own Mookie?
He would if he could. He complained so much.
I bet, yeah.
You'd think.
So that was one of the first things I saw, and I was like, oh, no. And then, so I tweeted, and friend of the show, Crichton, friend, he hit me up, and I was, well, first of all, I asked, like, hey, what are some of your favorite things about CES? And he responded with, actually, let me find the exact quote, because only he could say it this way to me. Bear in mind that I'm hearing his voice when he said this to me. He was like, I follow the KonMari method in all things, including CES coverage. And I was like, okay, what does that mean? So then I went and Googled KonMari, and she's an expert on organization and what seems like minimalism. I was like, oh, okay, so nothing. He was just basically saying, I don't like any of it. I don't need any of it. So that was my second experience. But really what redeemed it for me was the skin printer. That, well, that's probably a bad name for it. That's just what the title was. But it's basically a handheld makeup dispenser. It's like a handheld cologne stamp tool for your face. So you put it right on your face, and it will analyze your skin tone, and it will cover up a blemish for you.
What?
And I thought to myself, this is something I really need.
I mean... It's a podcast. We don't have to look at you, fortunately, so it's not really that important.
No, it's just very interesting. I was like, I would never.
Well, I mean, you could see this. I mean, putting him on my serious hat here. Like, if you have some kind of weird facial thing, like a weird birthmark that like people stared at for, you know, since you've been a kid, or like some kind of, I don't know, deformity or skin thing. Like, if it's not, you know, yeah, I could see it being useful for something besides just vanity. You know what I mean? But on the other hand, that's probably not who this is targeted at.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I was like, wow, that was the first thing that popped into my mind. I was like, this is like a handheld cologne stamp tool from Photoshop. Thought it was very, very interesting.
Maybe so, cover up tattoos or something. I don't know.
Hey, that's, yeah. Cover up tattoos, also, is it?
Shout out to BBC for having a video that loads but does not autoplay when the page loads. In fact, there's a toggle on the video controller that says autoplay on or off. So, Thank you, BBC, for once again being a shining beacon of journalistic integrity.
This thing, so what I thought was cool, again, like I said, it's like a clone stamp tool, but it looks like a tricorder from Star Trek, doesn't it?
I mean, how do you design a product that doesn't exist?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, what do you make it look like? Could look like anything.
Okay, so I've been just snarky this whole episode. What are some legitimately, like, some things that you think are legitimately cool that are coming out of CES?
So yeah, you tried to pick some ridiculous ones. I tried to pick ones that were relevant / I thought were interesting.
Okay.
Let's see here. Oh, Netgear Orbi. So we were just talking about Netgear Orbi.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just put this in here just to make you mad because you just bought a Netgear Orbi and now they have a new generation. But the most interesting thing I got out of this, besides the fact that it's faster and promises like gigabit LAN speed, which in practice, in theory, it's technically true. In practice, probably not. They're using 1024 QAM, which is like going back to like my signals and systems classes. Like,
yeah, I don't know what that means.
It's basically like the throughput. They're just making the throughput insane, but only under like very ideal conditions. Meaning, as soon as your signal to noise ratio starts to degrade a little bit, it's gonna fall back to slower speeds, basically, just like you see in Wi-Fi today. But like 1024 QAM is like things have to be looking at each other from across the room, basically. You know what I mean?
So
any kind of interference or any kind of wall or any kind of anything, and it's gonna add too much noise to the signal to be able to support that.
So they're claiming that you can actually get gigabit speeds over the air. That's what they're saying.
Yeah. Which, again, I believe, but only under very good conditions.
Yeah.
But it's still amazing.
We'll see.
But the interesting thing that I got out of this was that the Wi-Fi consortium or whatever, the Wi-Fi group, they actually have like a naming convention for Wi-Fi now. So traditionally, we've had 802.11a, then b, then g, then ac, then n, and now ax, which is this new standard. 802.11ax, now they're just calling it Wi-Fi 6.
What?
Yeah, so 4, 5, and 6 is 802.11ac, n, and then ax. They didn't bother naming a, b, and g 1, 2, and 3 for some reason. They just started at 4, so you've got 4, 5, and 6. So honestly, like, it's just a stupid thing, and as long as they don't start, like, you know, changing up the scheme and making it like Wi-Fi 7X max. I don't know.
Yeah, I was about to make an Apple joke, but you just took it from me.
Yeah,
so you can have it. You can have it. It's all right.
It's pronounced 10.
It's pronounced.
But I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. I think it's the right move, honestly. Yeah, it's just easier for people to understand.
It's cool. I mean, I like my Orbis a lot. I've had really good experiences with them. So both like in a smaller apartment and in the house that I'm in now, it just works really well. So previously I've had like extenders, but then you have to change the network yourself and it's really annoying. And the Orbi just works. Plug it in and you're good to go.
Yeah, Netgear's always made good networking stuff. I mean, I always get their switches whenever I can. You know, little nice metal switches that are like bulletproof. Like literally, like you spend an extra $10 and it comes with a lifetime warranty. That's awesome.
That does sound nice. Lifetime warranty.
The other thing I noticed when I was looking at reviews was like the sheer number and variety of Windows laptops. And by laptops, I mean like, you know, tablets / laptops. Windows portable devices, I should say, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's so much. There's this crazy Asus gaming laptop, which is like, it's kind of like a Surface in the sense that like all the guts are behind the screen and then the keyboard just detaches. It has a little stand in the back, right? Is that really practical? I don't know. It's different. It's interesting. You've got Huawei, who I didn't even know made laptops. Like, they make phones and like network equipment and stuff in China. And now, like, they make laptops, apparently. I don't know. And they look like, you know, they make pretty good, like, MacBook Air competitors, kind of. They look good. They look good. They, you know, have similar spec. They're cheaper, of course. Like, what I got out of this is, like, being so engrossed in the Mac ecosystem for so long. And Mac, or Apple does not have a presence at CES, of course. Right?
Sure.
And Macworld's not even a thing anymore. So they can't do that. Or they don't go to Macworld anymore, I should say. But, like, I really, really miss the days when I was, like, when I was into PCs, and every year, or there'd be something new, and there's something different. Just the sheer variety, and, like, I don't know if any of these things are necessarily good ideas, but it's cool that you have the option. It's cool that different companies are trying different things. You know, Microsoft is going really in on the Windows 10 tablet PC kind of unified operating system. Like they're trying stuff. They're throwing all kinds of stuff against the wall, and it's cool to have those options. And like, I don't know, I just then you're, you know, Apple products are great, but like they're all the same and you have no options basically. And yeah, I just really, really miss that feeling, the kind of excitement of kind of following it and seeing what's new and kind of considering what you would buy or whether you like something or not. It's like, I don't know, even just window shopping, it's cool to think about. Whereas now I don't even think about these things at all. I'm just like, oh, yeah, I don't care. Twice a year when Apple has their, you know, events. So.
I think I can definitely kind of echo that sentiment in theory, that is. So I think it was the Windows Book 2. Is it the Book 2? The Pro one. Yeah, the Surface Book 2. I almost picked up one of those because of the detachable screen. You just detach it and you have an iPad Pro. Then you slap it back onto the base of the laptop and you have your MacBook Pro equivalent, right?
Right.
And that seems great and all. And then, so what I did was I started to prepare and I started to use Windows on my tower a lot more. And then I stopped using Windows and was no longer prepared to buy a Windows laptop. And that, it's really, so I talked about wanting to get a Windows computer or possibly go Windows for a little while on a podcast, but I ended up just getting another MacBook Pro. And I'm honestly, like, pretty happy that I did, because I have Mac OS just dialed into how I wanted to use it. And a lot of that actually revolves around Alfred. But I was actually thinking about that earlier today, because things are just so, I don't know, I just sit down and my muscle memory is back and I just work and not have to think about things. And I never really got to that point with Windows, I don't think. I tried some alternatives to Alfred. They're just not Alfred. So, I don't know. In theory, like, yeah, I really do wish maybe Apple had some different form factors and experimented a little more, but I don't know. I'm still pretty stuck specifically on the Mac OS ecosystem.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was thinking about it and I'm like, I think, I don't know. I have a PC sitting on the other side of the room here. It's mostly my quote unquote gaming PC. It's not terribly up to spec anymore, but it's good enough. But I also use it for Windows development when I need to for RHR related things. But like, I could picture myself maybe going back to the world like of Windows for like my main computer, but I don't know. As long as I had like one Apple device to like kind of be the hub, like if I still just had like a MacBook, maybe I would go back to a Windows desktop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I still think about it sometimes, but then I'm just so productive on my Mac. It's just ingrained. It's just ingrained in here now.
Yeah. It's kind of momentum. And like, I was so, yeah. I think also my sort of patience and interest in tinkering and tweaking and building and modifying and customizing have just kind of gone away as I've gotten older.
Yes. Yep.
call that apathy, or just call it, I don't know, pragmatism. But that's kind of where I'm at personally. So,
I think you nailed it for me there. And it's very similar to how I used to try out different frameworks and languages all the time, and now I just have what I like, and then it's just good, and I like it, and I'm comfortable, and that's where I'm happy to be there, content to be there. So, yeah, I don't know. That's maybe I'll never leave. Maybe I will. I don't know. Who can know but the Oracle, right?
Reference
continuing on. Continuing on. I wanted to ask you what you thought about this. What's it, Semtrex Smart Desk? It was maybe.
Oh,
one of
this
the,
is wild.
Yeah,
this is wild. Smartestdesk.com. It's not just smart. It's smartest.
The smartestdesk.com. So I've seen people on YouTube. So I went down the designer office rabbit hole on YouTube, where people are like, check out the new and improved summer 2018 office look, you know, and it's like an IKEA desk with like a cactus on it and some pastel lights behind it. And I did see one person, or maybe it was even Linus Tech Tips. He built a computer into a desk. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I've never actually seen like that as just a consumer product until now. I'm sure it's existed, but basically the smart desk. So it comes with like three monitors. So the desk itself
is not just a. This is not just a. You got to back up, because this is not just a desk. This is a desk with a full workstation built into it.
Yes,
integrated as far as we can tell.
Yeah, it's the desk is the computer. It almost, now that I'm looking at it, if you scroll to the bottom where it says "cut out the clutter," I'll put the link in the show notes so you all can do this with me right now. Go to smartassess.com and scroll down to see "cut out the clutter." Now, just imagine you're looking at this thing. Doesn't it kind of look like a robot?
It kind of does. It's got legs. It's just missing like a big smiley face on the as a screensaver.
Oh, I bet it's smiling. Let's see, what has this got? It's got the PC built in, and the keyboard and the trackpad. It's just part of the desk surface, which I don't know how I feel about, because I want my keyboard.
Now, integrated Qi charger, I could totally get behind. You know, it's got a wireless charger that's built right flush in the surface of the desk. You just in a little LED indicator, so you just throw your phone or AirPods, you know, to be determined when those come out, and charge them. I like that. I could get into more furniture with Qi stuff built into it. Actually, yeah. Quick side note, one of the cool things I saw was a picture frame that had a Qi charger built into it. So it was like a picture frame that you put on a desk, and it was slanted, you know, just like a picture frame. But the actual frame itself was very, very deep. It was probably like an inch deep. And so normally it's a picture, a photograph, but there's a Qi charger behind it. So you just throw your phone right into the picture frame and it charges it without ever like looking like a charger.
I'm just imagining you throwing your phone like, you know, like when you have like the pitching, when you're practicing your pitching for baseball, you throw it at the little net, I guess. That's what I'm imagining.
Yeah,
just
with a little square on it.
Yeah. What else does this desk have? It's got the charger. It's got the keyboard and trackpad built in.
It has a quote unquote document scanner, which as far as I can tell is literally just a webcam taking a picture of a piece of paper on the desk.
It has the panels are also, it's got 72 inches of touchscreen panels on the desk.
Yeah, three screens.
It just, yeah, this thing looks intense.
And integrated weird Bluetooth charging headphones that look like the size of grapes. Large grapes.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. Very interesting product.
And also, I just happened to notice that the, so it has like up down arrows for the, because it's a sitting desk and a standing desk, which is nice because there's no wires, right? It's just probably just a power cord. Oh, something I didn't notice, that there's no like USB or like power strip attached to it, which is kind of a downside. But anyway, it's got raising and lowering, but it does not appear to have presets, which are like a very, I think, fundamental feature for a moving desk, because like you're never ever gonna, I've never had one, but if I did get one, I would get one with presets, because you're never gonna get it to the right height twice in a row.
Well, so if you did want to get this desk, it's gonna cost you a cool $4,400.
I mean, that's cool. That's a business expense. You can write that off.
Yeah, I'll just run that past my boss real quick. Yeah, okay. So there was actually one thing that I did really want to ask you about seriously. And it's about this Bell Nexus Flying Taxi. And oh, yeah. I think the headline was...
I didn't get
was,
a chance to look at this yet.
Yeah, I think the headline was possibly Uber's like flying taxi. Because I read somewhere that Bell Nexus is one of Uber's manufacturing partners or something like that. And for anyone that hasn't seen this, it looks like the front end of a train car with four basically... This looks just like something out of a game, maybe one of the Halo games.
It Unreal
looks like,
Tournament 2K4.
Yeah. So it's basically the front end of a train car, but smaller, and it has four propellers on it, like four mini helicopter
like a drone.
Propellers. It looks like a drone, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. What is your take on this? So I've read a couple of things where Elon Musk has talked about like why flying cars would be probably never happening or very difficult, and that's mainly because A, they'd most likely be loud. They'd consume quite a bit of fuel because it takes a lot of fuel to keep something in the air. And one of the other big reasons was because you're adding another dimension to travel. So when you're in a car, you go left and right, or if you're on a bridge, you go up and down, but you don't ever go over a car or under another car. Well, you shouldn't be doing that. And as soon as you add a level of flying, you're adding another dimension to travel. And he's like, that's just going to be too difficult to navigate, especially for humans. So he argues that at that point, it would need to be an automated system that's controlling it at that point. What I wanted to know, as someone that has or will soon have their pilot's license, what do you think about this?
This is literally the most surface level take here, because I've not had time to actually think about it. So I'm going to form my thoughts.
Yeah,
I don't know where these sentences are going to go once I start them. So, couple things. This looks cool. flying technology. Let's start there. The technology of flight. Current, modern, state-of-the-art airplanes. Think of commercial airliners. Is so slow and outdated. I don't want to say outdated. It's like we are almost at the point where GPS is going to be a required technology in airplanes, but it's not until 2020. And by required, I mean really? Only in certain airspaces. Yeah.
Did not know that.
The requirements for flight legally right now are like, you don't even need to have like a radio. Like legally, you can fly in and out of airports through tons of airspace, as long as you avoid, you know, any major or even tiny airport. Like you could just fly whatever, wherever, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Class G, which is uncontrolled airspace, and it's from the surface up to 700, in some cases 1200 feet. And the requirements for flying in that are very minimal, right? And so this is something that would kind of operate in that airspace, I assume. But maybe not. Like you said, for sound purposes, like you want this stuff to be up high, right?
Mm-hmm.
At airports, they have things called noise abatement procedures, where basically if your airport is surrounded by a congested area, you have to do certain maneuvers to avoid that congested area, right?
Huh.
Some places you're not even allowed to fly patterns, you know, fly in laps around the airport unless you're just coming in or going out. You can't like do practice takeoffs and landings. In some areas, you have to maintain traffic pattern altitude. You know, you have to maintain a certain height for a certain number of miles before you can turn. At our airport, where there's like a big congested area off to the right, you have to like basically turn left as soon as possible when you take off, right? Depending on which direction you're taking off. So it's like, yeah, noise is already a problem. Airports are only closing. Like, there's no new airports, right? The last major airport to open was Denver. And as far as small general aviation airports to go, there's no new airports. They're just getting cut and slashed and removed left and right because of, you know, they're being taken over by developments. And just, you know, like you said, the noise issue, general aviation as a whole is just going away. There's a pilot shortage in the commercial sector right now. Like, if you're a pilot and you can breathe, like you're going to get hired. So all this is to say, this is not feasible as it is. Becoming a pilot is not insanely difficult. Anyone can do it. It's kind of expensive, but anyone can do it. You don't need any formal education of anything to do it.
Huh.
As far as automation goes, if the technology can get there to like make it automated enough, like Yeah, that I mean, autopilots are a thing, right? Like, it's not like the plane will fly itself, but
sure,
it takes
yeah.
a huge load off of the pilot to attend to other matters. So I don't know if something like this will ever be fully automated for carrying passengers, at least not in the near future. There are lots of other concerns. Also, you have to think about emergency landings. What happens if, you know, this thing has four rotors? What if one of them fails? Does the thing spin? Does it tilt over? Is it, you know, how many of these things can fail before it has to, you know, make a hard landing somewhere? What happens if it runs out of fuel? You know, these are, I don't know if you can auto-rotate a helicopter where, like, you can land it without power by using the auto-rotation of the rotors to give it lift, even though the engine's not working. I don't know if you can do that with these four tiny rotors like this. So all that is to say, this is a very much pipe dream right now. It looks cool in practice. I think it's something reserved for, like, take a tour of downtown Dubai and, you know, it costs sure. like $500 an hour to do.
Yeah.
So that's my quick take on that. It's kind of rambling.
I didn't know most of that, actually. I would have figured that the airspace would have been more tightly regulated.
Oh, no. It's the Wild West out there. It seriously is crazy. Like, when I'm out doing my practice flights, like, basically in the middle of nowhere, Connecticut, I almost always see at least one plane. Just out of the blue. Just, you know, I'm not on radar or I'm not on radio with anyone. I'll just see a plane coming at me. I'll just be like, oh, okay. I have to go somewhere else now.
Right.
So
that's wild.
Yeah. Flying taxi of the future.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. I have more hope in the Orbi giving me gigabit over air speeds.
I would bet on the Orbi over the Bell Uber taxi for sure.
Yeah, I probably yeah.
They also liken that to what Terminator 2?
Mm-hmm.
The drones in that.
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Oh.
Enter the Matrix, a video game?
Oh, I forgot about that game.
Oh, man. That was rough. I tried to play it.
Yeah.
It's not very good.
I would very much be interested to hear what other people think about this. This little, I don't even know what to call it. It does look like a drone. It really does look like a drone. What other people would think
about
this.
There's so much stuff we didn't even get to talk about.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of stuff, but we're running out of time. Well, we would love to hear about your favorite products that have been announced at CES. Is it the Uber Chopper? I don't know what else to call it. Is it...
Get to the Uber!
Is it the...
Sorry. Please don't put that in.
Is it the computer desk with the computer in it and 72 inches of touchscreen display? Is it something else? Let us know. We would love to hear about that.
Should I tell them how they can tell us? How we can hear them?
Probably.
Yeah. Twitter. We have a Twitter show account, @DNCShow. We also have a couple of personal accounts, because we are individual people, @SeanWashbot and @Shrockwell.
If you're looking for all the stuff that we talked about today, I'll put all the links to the products that we talked about in our show notes, and you can find those at dnc.show.
And you can be just like friend of the show, Kevin, and shoot us questions over on spectrum.chat. We do respond to them quite long and thoughtfully. I was surprised by the amount of time and effort you put into those responses. It was some interesting read, actually. So come talk to us at spectrum.chat.
Yeah, and thanks to Spec Network for having us around. If you're interested in other design and development related podcasts, you should definitely check out some of their shows on the network, like Design Details and Fragmented, and of course, Developer T and Swift Unwrapped. So if you're interested at all in design and development, you should definitely head on over to spec.fm and check out some of the other shows.
This episode of Does Not Compute was edited and produced by Sarah Jackson. We'll see if we can get you all turned up next week.
Oh, I can come in hot if you want.
Bring it.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
See you. To celebrate CES moving to .tech, head on over to go.tech/CESLive and use code CESLive for 90% off registrations for 1, 5, and 10-year .tech domains. Make your next big idea memorable with a .tech domain.